Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Well, if you can't hold up under the home cooking questioning at MSNBC, I don't know how much chance there is for your story to get traction. So is the case of Julie Swetnick. Now, normally we wouldn't even bring her up because I'm not sure, because she's represented by Michael Avenatti.
Exactly. She's a porn star's lawyer.
She was mentioned, and Democrats keep talking about three accusers. Her name did come up in the theater of the grotesque on Thursday. So Julie Swetnick sat down with MSNBC's Kate Snow. I don't know who these people are.
Love Kate Snow.
I've never heard of her.
She's married to a former football player at University of Iowa who is from Palatine High School.
Is that right?
The Brahms, yeah.
What's his name, Snow?
What? No, is it Brahm?
Brahm.
Yeah. So that's her real name. But
does
no,
he just
she,
have one name like Kate's Cher?
Name.
What's his first name?
I don't know if I should. I mean, Peter. He played for Palatine High School, then he went on and played at University of Iowa. He met Kate Snow. And he stays at home and raises the kids, and she works. He's a cool dude. Love him.
Stay-at-home dad, huh?
No, he's a great, great father. Great guy.
I love that. Like, you gave his last name. You gave who he's married to. I don't know if I should say his first name. I don't want to out him.
I don't know.
Okay.
He's a great guy, and his sister has Down syndrome, and that's how my sister was her teacher. So that's how our families know each other, and she was in my sister's wedding, and... they're a great family.
All right. It was nice to see Iowa produce something.
Hey.
Julie Swetnick with Kate Snow, who's married to some Iowa football player from Palatine. So you have the full backstory.
Whose younger sister is Kara?
Yeah, Kara. You remember.
I love
remember
Kara. Kara's awesome. And if she's listening, we love you, Kara.
Yeah. Remember those times at Dirty Nellie's? Sure.
We tore it up.
Yeah.
When we got kicked out, they had to bring out the mops and the brooms and pound the
table. We kept it clean, though.
We know. Yeah, we did.
We didn't throw ice at anybody.
No, we didn't.
We'll get to that.
Stop throwing ice at me, okay?
Julie Swetnick. When did she come? Did she come forward after Ford?
No, she came. She was the third.
No, I know. I'm not confused. She is.
Oh, so you only thought about coming forward when you learned about Dr. Ford?
Yes. Because I did not know how close Brett Kavanaugh was to possibly becoming the next Supreme Court justice.
I just want to get the timeline right about this because he was nominated in July. Dr. Christine Blasey Ford came forward in the Washington Post more recently in September. Mm-hmm. So was it in September that you...
It's been several weeks, but I'm not somebody who follows the news. I'm not political at all.
Well, you might want to get on that, Tootsie, because you're in the news, okay?
It's been several weeks. Today's October 2nd. was it September? Was it 5 minutes ago? It's all sort of a haze.
And while we're watching this or listening, just keep in mind that she sued the Washington, D.C. Metro system because she fell and broke her nose, and it hurt and damaged her modeling career that she said she lost out to $420,000. Because she fell and broke her nose.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Her modeling career. Okay.
Same thing happened to Jeff Flake.
Oh, yeah. He has a deviated septum.
At least.
Which is 5 miles long.
Swetnick talking about Kavanaugh's conduct on the night in question.
Did you actually meet him?
I did actually meet him. I remember meeting him because I remember he's got a very distinctive face. Very distinctive face, and as does Mark Judge. And I remember specifically meeting him, being introduced to him.
Okay, so there's her specific meeting. She doesn't provide any details of that. She just says, I remember, and Kate Snow didn't press her on that because she works for MSNBC. And Swetnick then, of course, the salacious allegations explaining the gang rape and the trains.
Did you see Brett Kavanaugh, you know, spiking the punch, putting green
alcohol
in the punch?
I saw him giving red Solo cups to quite a few girls during that time frame, and there was green punch at those parties. And I would not take one of those glasses from Brett Kavanaugh, excuse me. I saw him around the punch, I won't say bowls, or the punch containers. I don't know what he did, but I saw him buy them, yes.
In her declaration, Swetnick also wrote, I also witnessed efforts by Mark Judge, Brett Kavanaugh, and others to cause girls to become inebriated and disoriented so they could then be gang raped in a side room or bedroom by a train of numerous boys. I have a firm recollection of seeing boys lined up outside rooms at many of these parties, waiting for their turn with a girl inside the room. These boys included Mark Judge and Brett Kavanaugh.
What did you see?
It's very innocent. Well, until what happened to me, I didn't put two and two together. But I would see boys standing outside of rooms, congregated together, sort of like a gauntlet. And I didn't know what was occurring. But I would see them laughing, a lot of laughing.
Standing in line outside a room?
They would, not line, but definitely huddled by doors. And I didn't understand what it could possibly be.
And in your declaration, you describe Brett Kavanaugh and his friend Mark Judge standing outside,
yes.
Seeing them stand outside a door.
Yes, with other boys.
So you're suggesting that, in hindsight,
yes,
you think he was involved in this behavior?
I would say yes. It's just too coincidental.
Yeah. So we have Solo cups that may or may not have been passed out by Brett Kavanaugh, who she remembers meeting, and boys congregating, not in lines, in groups, outside of doors laughing. I rest my case, Your Honor.
Oh, it gets worse than she said he was pushing people into walls.
I saw him push girls against walls.
Oh, yeah.
He would pretend to stumble and stumble into them and knock them into a wall. He'd push his body against theirs. He would grope them.
But the money bite, the culmination of this interview where you flat out know this woman is a lying sack of you know what, and she's sick and twisted, and here it is.
I was at a party. And I remember that I started not to feel very well. And next thing I know, I was shoved into a room and I'm having my clothes torn in different directions. I was touched everywhere. I was physically assaulted in every way you could possibly physically assault a woman. It was horrible. I had no way to fend them off.
You know what I'm going to ask. Everyone is wondering if one of those people was Brett Kavanaugh.
Here we go.
I cannot specifically say that he was one of the ones who assaulted me.
Okay.
But before this happened to me at that party, I saw Brett Kavanaugh there. I saw Mark Judge there. And they were hanging about the area where I started to feel disoriented.
Busted.
And where the room was. And where the other boys were hanging out and laughing. I could hear them laughing and laughing. And it's very hard for me to talk about this, but it's important that somebody says something.
I mean, the bottom line is, was it him who assaulted you? No. But he was there. I mean, he was there. He was handing out Solo cups. He was at the party. She is a lying sack of, you know what? Her attorney, Michael Avenatti, should get his law license yanked because he's a disgrace.
Yeah, it's also important. I mean, I will give the Iowa football player's wife, what's her name?
Kate Snow.
Give her some credit. She actually did do a fact check because Swetnick provided some names for her to check out in terms of corroborating her story about the party. And this is what Kate Snow found.
Yes, there are people that know about those parties.
This morning, Swetnick provided four names of friends she says went to the parties with her. One of them said he does not recall a Julie Swetnick. Another of the friends she named is deceased. We've reached out to the other two and haven't heard back. Swetnick says after the alleged attack on her when she was 19, she never returned to those big house parties.
Okay. So we got the solo cups and we got the boys congregating. Brett Kavanaugh may or may not have been one of them, may or may not have been congregating at a party that may or may not happen.
But the bottom line, he didn't touch her. Well, he didn't rape her.
She doesn't know.
Well, she said she couldn't. She doesn't know. I don't know.
Right. She doesn't know anything. She knows this party happened. This is what she alleges, which she knows there were solo cups. She knows there was spiked punch. She knows that boys were trying to inebriate girls. Like how exactly? Like, would you like a drink? And she knows that those same boys that were handing out drinks were congregating around doors. Real bombshell.
This is why the FBI is ignoring her and not even interviewing her.
Greg in LaGrange, you're in Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, morning, guys.
Morning.
One question I didn't hear from Kate Snow is why, if she was subject to this physical violence and sexual assault, she never pressed charges.
Yeah, good question.
I guess there's no more due process, is there?
No.
Good question. Thanks for the call, Greg. I mean, this is a question that should be put to Ms. Ford as well. I mean, now. I understand traumatized after the alleged incident is potentially what you'd say. I mean, now. You're not too traumatized to testify before Congress, so why would you be too traumatized to file a police report? Now, again, no statute of limitations in Montgomery County, Maryland. When does the police report get filed? Ed in Oak Brook, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
You know what? I just want to scream because this is such crap. I don't know how any responsible channel could even put this on. But she mentions red cups, red solo cups, Dan. She mentions green punch. But she only mentions two names, Mark Judge and Judge Kavanaugh. She doesn't mention anyone else at these parties, but yet there was people all over the place. Who did she go with? Why did she stay there if this was such a rowdy type affair? This lady is so full of crap. And you know what? I hope they charge her with something for bringing this kind of crap to the American airwaves. And I hope the FBI investigates that for false, I don't know what to even call it anymore. I'm just lost for words anymore. Have a nice day.
Thanks, Ed.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Some call me the sage from South Central. Others call me the czar of common sense. But you can call me Larry Elder. And you're invited to join me tonight, starting at 7, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Does the left speak for the marginalized? Is that what the Me Too movement represents? The left speaking for marginalized people in this country? Is that what the ACLU is doing? Speaking for the marginalized. 312-642-5600, turnkey, dot pro, answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey, dot pro, text line. The ACLU is out with a million-dollar campaign, ad campaign, in swing states, meaning Democrats and red states. Mm-hmm. And here's an example of the ad that's running in Colorado targeting Cory Gardner.
We've seen this before. Denials from powerful men.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
I've never seen anything like this.
I categorically and unequivocally deny the allegation against me by Dr. Ford.
America is watching. And as we choose a lifetime seat on our highest court, integrity matters, and we cannot have any doubt. Senator Gardner, oppose the confirmation of Judge Kavanaugh.
The ACLU, Bill Clinton, Bill Cosby, Brett Kavanaugh, same sentence. It's interesting. Dershowitz, our friend Alan Dershowitz, has been very critical of the ACLU, to which he is a longtime supporter. The ACLU kind of thrown out the window the rule of law, the Constitution, due process, freedom of speech, all in the name of prosecuting their and the left's war against President Trump and his administration. And so now do we see the same thing the ACLU is doing here? It's interesting to note as well, the ABA, big story over the weekend, that the ABA rescinded essentially its rating of Brett Kavanaugh's highly qualified. They clarified that yesterday, saying that his rating as highly qualified has not changed. The evaluation has not changed. The committee conducts nonpartisan, ideological, and confidential peer review of federal judicial nominees. The ABA's rating for Judge Kavanaugh is not affected by this letter that was written by one member of the committee who was sort of essentially speaking out of turn. Now, the ABA is also a left-wing front group.
Yeah.
I mean, they're terrible. But it's just worth noting, in terms of highly qualified, that hasn't changed. But that question I asked, because that's what rich white liberals would have you believe. They're the vanguard for the marginalized. And the Me Too movement is an example of that, right? Isn't that what the Women's March was as well? You know, rich left-wing friends in Lakeview putting on their pee hats.
Heading to Washington, D.C.
By the way,
taking it to the streets, Dan.
They should dust them off January 19th, 10 a.m. It's been set for next year.
Oh, the Women's March on D.C.?
Yeah.
January what?
January 19th, right there's 10 a.m. sharp, so Ashley Judd will be bringing her bloody jeans, your friends, their pee hats, Madonna with her assassination threats.
Oh, yeah.
So it should be a rollicking good time. Linda Sarsour, of course, one of the organizers, will bring a healthy dose of anti-Semitism, which all those rich Jewish ladies must really enjoy. Apparently they do. Remarkable. I asked the question about marginalized and who pretends to speak for whom and who actually does. So you see what's happening with elites that, I don't know, show up as guests of Dianne Feinstein at a confirmation hearing.
Oh, you mean Alyssa Milano?
I do.
With her little bun.
Our friend Bob Woodson, civil rights leader, Woodson Center, conservative. Read a piece from him last week that he penned for The Hill talking about his experiences in the workplace, one where he came to the defense of a woman who was being mistreated by, I mean, in terms
right,
of like her professional development. She was having an affair with a married man in the office. She wanted to break it off, and he was punishing her professionally for doing so, right? So then he came to her defense. And on the flip side, he was wrongly accused, and the think tank he was working for at the time wanted to settle it. He said, absolutely not. We're not going that way. The response to the attorney for the woman accuser's demand letter was, we're not settling, and the complaint went away. Bob Woodson, a great piece in The Hill, how the elite hijacked the Me Too movement. In today's outrage culture, this bias is common. The degree of outrage depends not on the nature of the violation, but on the identity of the victim. On the rare occasions when police shoot civilians, there's outrage only when the victim is black, armed, or unarmed. When a sex crime is involved, the Me Too movement mainly ignites when the victim is white, a celebrity, or a well-educated, credentialed professional. But what about the women who don't have these upper-class credentials? Who are they, and what do we know of their circumstances? He recounts, of course, Illinois, because you can't talk about scumbag sexual predators in public office without talking about Illinois. Gus Savage. The infamous Gus Savage. In an official visit to Zaire in 1989, Gus Savage was accused of trying to sexually assault a 21-year-old black female Peace Corps worker assigned to brief Savage on the group's activities there. Was there ever a more Dickensian-named congressman than Gus Savage? When she lodged an official complaint with her superiors, the congressman denied her claim. He was censured by Congress, but was reelected to a seat, of course, with Democrats rallying for him. The name of the young woman was not made public, but her attorney relayed to me, writes Woodson, that she feared retaliation from Savage's supporters and as a result was prevented from visiting her parents who lived in Savage's district. No public outcry for this from the women's movement for this injustice. And in 1993, of course, Gus Savage defeated by Mel Reynolds. Boy, the hits keep on coming, huh? And then, of course, Jesse Jackson Reynolds. After him. We don't even get to Junior. And then Mel Reynolds, of course, found guilty of having sex with a 16-year-old, also black girl, sentenced to prison.
And now tax evasion.
Well, right, but Clinton commuted Reynolds' sentence.
Right, because they're both Rhodes Scholars.
That's not why. And because, and then he went to work for Jesse Jackson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where was the outrage then? In 1998, NBC aired a primetime special, Women in Prison, Nowhere to Hide, hosted by Jerry Rivers, Geraldo Rivera, on the sexual assault of women in the Michigan prison system. Woodson writes, the detailed testimony about daily rapes of black women by male guards and their supervisors was heart-wrenching, at times beyond description in its brutality. Where was the outrage then? Tarana Burke, who is the black female activist from Harlem who actually originated the Me Too movement, began in 2006, 10 years after Burke bonded with a young girl at a youth camp. The girl revealed she had been sexually assaulted by her mother's boyfriend, and Burke took steps to help the community take action to protect such children, since there were no rape crisis centers nor any aid for sexual assault victims in the community in Harlem. Burke was clear about the goal and purpose of the Me Too movement, quote, to aid underprivileged women of color affected by sexual abuse. Is that the movement now? Woodson suggests the movement has been hijacked by the, you know, bait and switch game of the elites after all of the allegations against Harvey Weinstein. That's who we're supposed to care about, is the celebrities and celebutants that were assaulted by Harvey Weinstein. And we can care for them, too, be concerned about what happened to them as well. But Woodson's saying, what about the original focus of the mission? And what about the underprivileged? Bob Woodson spent his life advocating on behalf of the poor, regardless of color. The truly underprivileged, the truly marginalized, not the phony baloney marginalized that the left trots out, because you can see yourself in that Palo Alto academic. The needs of women living in trailer parks, trapped in crime-ridden and drug-infested urban neighborhoods, languishing in our foster care prison systems will continue to be ignored by Me Too. These women reside in the not you hashtag isolated areas of the country, out of sight and out of mind. And then he actually solicits stories from women who count themselves among the not you. Very much, this is very much like a J.D. Vance's hillbilly elegy during the Trump campaign, and how, you know, spoke to the sort of the forgotten Americans, to borrow Amity Schley's formulation as well, the forgotten Americans, the hillbillies, the discarded, they're not interesting, white trash, not interesting. Urban youth in poverty-stricken areas, in shooting galleries like the West and South Side of Chicago, well, that'll get some media coverage. Appalachia, not so much. No. This is such a great piece by Woodson, and it's a reminder, the Me Too movement, just like we should remind people of the left's ever-evolving, changing, regressing opinions on matters depending on the identity of the alleged perpetrator and the identity of the victim. MoveOn.org. You know where the name comes from?
No.
The Soros-funded organization that's been prosecuting the Kavanaugh campaign, one of the many, founded 20 years ago. Move on, Congress, from the Bill Clinton allegations.
Really?
It was move on already. Move on. Censure him and move on with get off this impeachment business. Move on. MoveOn.org. It's interesting to understand the history, because you see how things are bastardized or become caricatures of themselves. Eddie in Milwaukee, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, guys. I haven't voted since 1992. The last person I voted for was Ross Perot, and I vowed I'd never vote again. But after what they've been doing to Kavanaugh, I'm going to register this November. I'm going to vote for every single Republican I can find. I don't care, black, white, Hispanic, male, female. I don't care what they look like, what they stand for. If they got an R, they get my vote.
Good, because Scott Walker and Leah Vukmir need your vote up there. Thanks for the call, Eddie. Appreciate it. Tom in Deer Park.
Oh, hi. Good morning. You were talking about the district where Gus Savage represented or misrepresented then Mel Reynolds, yeah, and then Jesse Jackson Jr. It spurred the memory of something. I'm sorry?
No,
I said it was a great congressional seat. I mean,
It's like the 27 Yankees, quite a lineup there. Yeah.
Well, you know, the hits just keep coming now. it's represented by Robin Kelly, who I don't think has any of the issues that those guys did. But as soon as she announced running for office, she got endorsed by the usuals, Bobby Rush, Jan Schakowsky, then got $2 million in TV ads from Mayor Michael Blomberg, who is probably the biggest anti-Second Amendment advocate in this country. And she got $2 million in ads from him because she was against the NRA. So that's what she's doing down there right now. And it's, and you mentioned the ACLU. It all ties in.
Have you ever had a conversation with Robin Kelly?
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Tom.
Did you learn anything when you had a conversation with Robin Kelly?
She had a golf outing at Olympia Fields the same day I hosted a golf outing for this nonprofit I'm on the board of.
Mm-hmm. So you had the front 18 and she had the back?
Well, there's two courses. There's two 18s. So they had the south, we had the north. They're both great courses, by the way.
Okay, good. Yeah. Which one do you find more challenging?
Maybe someday you'll be invited to play there. Maybe.
I'm still waiting. It's October. There's still time. So how did it go?
I remarked to her that it's like everybody on my side of the course is paying for the lives of everybody on your side of the course. Isn't that interesting?
You said that to her?
Yeah, because it was all lobbyists and, the creatures from, this was like an expensive golf outing. So it was ours, right? I mean, so, yeah, it's all the Beltway insiders and their local representatives that are, and, flax for other politicians who can write a check out of their campaign account that are feather bedding Robin Kelly's campaign account. All the tax eaters and then all the producers who are at a philanthropic golf outing.
Right.
It was a tale of two worlds, a tale of two paths, a tale of Illinois, just on that one day at Olympia Fields. Gus Savage not invited.
Oh.
Because he's dead and because he's a scumbag. Mel Reynolds not invited.
Not invited because he's in jail, right?
And I believe he's...
he went back to the clink.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, well... And when he gets out.
Or did
he
escape to go back to Africa?
Yeah, I don't know. I think he had.
Got some cougar ants.
I don't know if he and Mugabe or other sub-Saharan African dictators have made up yet. We'll have to keep track of that.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Mitch McConnell yesterday took to the Senate floor. He is the Senate Majority Leader, don't you know?
Yes, he is.
And he confirmed that there will be a confirmation vote this week.
Their goalposts keep shifting, but their goal hadn't moved an inch, not an inch. The goal's been the same all along. And so let me make it very clear. The time for endless delay and obstruction has come to a close. Judge Kavanaugh's nomination is out of committee. We're considering it here on the floor, and Mr. President, we'll be voting this week.
All right, so this is going to come to an end one way or the other. It seems Mitch McConnell is intent. And
But isn't that bad that he's making up his mind before the FBI has released their report? Shouldn't he be more open-minded? I mean, we ripped down the Democrats for doing that. They knew who they were going to vote for before the hearing began.
No, I'm sorry. He's calling a vote. The FBI report is to be done by the end of the week, so the vote could come this weekend. So read the report and vote.
All right.
How's that making up your mind? How's it making up your mind? Every single Democrat, as McConnell pointed out in his remarks, starting with Chuck Schumer, their leader, Pagliacci, said as soon as Kavanaugh was nominated, before any of the allegations, he will do everything in his power, Schumer will, to stop Kavanaugh's confirmation. So I love the idea that there's some guesswork here in terms of how people are going to vote. Golly, Chris Coons, on the one hand, I could identify with Kavanaugh. On the other hand, I think he was a little bit sharp where he shouldn't have been to my colleagues. Yeah, Chris Coons' vote is very much in doubt, isn't it? No. Cory Booker, Kamala Harris.
All right. I mean, the things that are in doubt, Flake, Collins and Murkowski and Jeff Flake was at an event last night.
We certainly want the FBI to do a real investigation, and we are working to make sure that that happens. It does no good to have an investigation that just gives us more cover.
And I feel like the investigation now is shifting not toward sexual assault or groping or whatever, sexual abuse, but more towards, did he black out in high school? Did he black out?
Yeah, it's about drinking now.
It's all about drinking and the drinky drink. And his friend, Chad Luddington, one of his Yale roommates, said
classmates, whatever, said
that he...
No, there's a difference.
So it's not a roommate. This is a classmate. Okay. Yeah, you're right. Had this to say.
He testified that he did drink and wasn't proud of everything.
He did. But he also downplayed to a great degree the possibility that he could ever not know what was going on.
So you're saying there were omissions?
I'm saying there were omissions. There were certainly many times when he could not remember what was going on.
I mean, honestly, let's go into Chad Luddington's history with the bottle at Yale and everywhere else. Give me specific incidents. And should we even be talking about this in the first place?
Well, Luddington saw his testimony and decided to insert himself.
Yeah, I know he did.
He contacted the FBI and he met with them in their North Carolina
I know.
Office.
He wants to be somebody. Yeah. Kavanaugh's roommate, Dan Murphy, I never saw Brett black out or not be able to remember the prior evening's events, nor did I ever see Brett act aggressive, hostile, or in a sexually aggressive manner to women. I mean, we could just go back and forth till rapture with this because you have people that are being beaten out of the brush into the limelight, some because they're useful, others because they want that their little time in the sun to make one statement or the other. And, you know, their motives, their interests, their recollection, their ability to provide details that can be corroborated. It's not even a question. We're just sitting here talking about whether Brett Kavanaugh was ever binge drunk at Yale. I mean, it is really absurd.
He perjured himself when he
312. I know what they're saying. Yeah. I know what they're saying. The question is whether it's reductio ad absurdum. 312-642-5600, turkey.proanswerline, 646-36DA, turkey.protextline.
What did you say? Reductio ad absurdum? I had that removed last week.
You should.
Near my abdomen.
Yeah, it's vestigial.
So it's not gonna
negatively impact your health, but there's no reason to carry it around.
Exactly. Yeah. But Brett Kavanaugh, I mean, he wasn't shy about his love for the suds.
Did the word, Ralph, you used
in your book? I already answered the question.
Did it relate to alcohol?
I like beer.
You haven't answered that.
I like beer. I don't know if you, okay. You like beer, Senator, or not. What do you like to drink?
Next one is...
Senator, what do you like
judge.
To drink?
That was my... I like beer. What do you like to drink? A very honest.
Yeah, Q&A. Right. I mean, how many times do we have to play Sheldon Whitehouse's, playing archaeologist with his yearbook and then talking about his drinking in New Haven? I mean, it is. Come on.
Silly.
This is all you have? And wait a second. This is Me Too. He's a rapist. You're talking about women, and women's stories need to be heard, and women's stories not need to be believed. Now you're not even talking about women at all.
No, now it's all about the suds. All about the beer.
312-642-5600, turkey.proanswerline, 646-36DA, turkey.protextline. Some interesting polling out, because this is, there's two things that are actually happening here that are the real concern of the politicians. And Brett Kavanaugh and Ms. Ford and the rest, they're just sort of bit players in this. The two things that are of actual concern, Roe v. Wade and the midterms.
Boy, it always comes down.
That's it.
Yeah, but so they're trying to get him on something. And since there's no they're there with the ladies, of course they're trying to do that. President Trump.
Well, and on the polls.
Yes, on the polls.
On the polls, I mean, because the report was absent any corroborating evidence for Ford's allegations, Manchin was going to be a yes vote. Trump's in Wheeling, West Virginia on Saturday night. He makes the point that 58-28 West Virginians want Kavanaugh confirmed. In North Dakota, another pickup opportunity. Kevin Cramer, the Republican there running against Heitkamp, recent poll has him up 10%, 51-41. He's virtually tied with Heitkamp, who's a female, Heidi Heitkamp, of course. Virtually tied among females, 60% of likely voters in North Dakota support the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh to the U.S. Supreme Court, only 27 were opposed. So you've got some red state senators mm-hmm. that are in a bind. And you know, if Jeff Flake doesn't get the okay from Chris Coons to vote yes, or Susan Collins or Lisa Murkowski are faint of heart, you may have red state Democrat senators who put this nomination over the top.
And if it's a tie, of course, Mike Pence would be the tiebreaker.
Correct. Randy in Elkhorn.
Yeah, how do you manage to drink so much and still graduate number one in your class?
He's a functional alcoholic.
You play hard and you work hard.
Yeah.
And President Trump talked about the brouhaha.
I watched him. I was surprised at how vocal he was about the fact that he likes beer. And he's had a little bit of difficulty. I mean, he talked about things that happened when he drank. I mean, this is not a man that said that alcohol was that he was perfect with respect to alcohol. No, I thought he was actually, going back so many years, I thought he was excellent. The interesting thing is, though, nobody asked him about what's happened in the last 25, 30 years during his professional career, because there were no bad reports. There are bad reports on everybody in here. Most of the people sitting down, they're bad, except for Mike Pence, by the way. And if we find one on him, then I think that'll be the greatest shock of all time.
True. Chip in St. Charles.
Yes, I saw Kavanaugh's kindergarten teacher came out yesterday and said that he pulled a little girl's pigtail when he was in kindergarten, and I don't know how we can have somebody like that on.
Right.
Or, you know, he's abusing minors.
Thanks for the call, Chip. I the sarcasm is received. David in McCook.
Hey, good morning, guys. You guys think Brett Kavanaugh has any regrets of all this? Even having his name thrown in the middle of this?
Well,
no, he's in it to win it. I mean, he's not backing it down.
I don't know.
I know if I was Brett Kavanaugh, I would tell the self-righteous, goody-two-shoe Democrats to shove it up their rear ends.
Yeah, that's sort of what he did in a roundabout way on Thursday. Thanks for the call, David. Mike on the north side.
Good morning, kids. They're looking, this is a search and destroy mission. They're looking for any little thing, they're going to blow it out of proportion. We had presidents who said they smoked marijuana. None of these Democrats were jumping up and down saying get rid of them. And it came out over the weekend that this Blasey Ford on her Facebook page a year and a half ago posted that someone should accuse Neil Gorsuch of rape and the accusations should continue until Trump is forced to appoint Merrick Garland. Now, if she is encouraging people to commit perjury, can we believe anything she says?
I haven't seen that Facebook post, but I'll check that out. All right, thanks for the call, Mike. Appreciate it.
And there's, rarely does President Trump have self-deprecating humor, but yesterday was a time when you talked about beer and how that's not one of his vices.
I'm not a drinker. I can honestly say I never had a beer in my life, okay?
Right.
It's one of my only good traits. I don't drink. Whenever they're looking for something good, I say, I never had a glass of alcohol. I've never had alcohol. I've just, you know, for whatever reason. Can you imagine if I had, what a mess I'd be? I'd be the world's worst.
Everything in moderation, Mr. President. I don't count that as a good trait.
I think it's fine. Well, his brother, he should just say my brother Fred died from alcohol abuse, and that's why I don't drink, and I've never tried it.
Yeah, but...
you don't trust a man who doesn't drink? You don't trust the Mitt Romneys?
Sort of. Mm-hmm. I mean, unless it's medical or, like, a familial thing, I get that, but I mean...
Religious?
Like, at 21, I mean, Fred didn't have this drinking problem manifest itself at 21, did he? When Trump was 21?
No, when Trump was growing up, he saw his brother deteriorate.
Oh, it was.
He watched it over the years, and then eventually he died from it.
Yeah, I know that.
Well, you want President Trump to drink, don't you? What I hear you saying is that you want him to have a nice cold draft, huh?
Well, I would say after a long day listening to Cory Booker and Dick Blumenthal, I mean, I don't know how you don't say, boy, could I go for a tumbler of scotch? These people. Dan in Libertyville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Thanks for taking my call. I find it interesting that Brett Kavanaugh gets no presumption of innocence, yet when it comes to Mrs. Ford's letter being released, Mrs. Feinstein and the rest of Democrats are all demanding that they be presumed innocent. How dare you point a finger at me that this letter that was supposed to be kept confidential was released?
Yeah, right. I see what you're saying. All right. Thanks for the call, Dan. Yeah, I mean, speaking of the ne'er-do-wells on the Senate Judiciary Committee, Trump took them in turn yesterday at this press conference to announce the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, the USMCA.
USMCA?
Yeah.
As it's known. After 24 years, no more NAFTA, it's USMCA.
USMCA. We'll get to that. But Trump tackling each in turn, starting with Senator missing in action.
Look at some of these people asking the questions, okay? Look at Blumenthal. He lied about Vietnam. He didn't just say, hey, I went to Vietnam. No, no. For 15 years, he said he was a war hero. He fought in Da Nang province. We call him Da Nang Richard. Da Nang. That's his nickname. Da Nang. He never went to Vietnam. And he's up there saying, we need honesty and we need integrity. This guy lied when he was the Attorney General of Connecticut. He lied.
On Booker.
I mean, take a look at Cory Booker. He ran Newark, New Jersey into the ground. He was a horrible mayor. And he made statements that when he was in high school or college, what he was doing, he actually made the statements. And now he's talking about Judge Kavanaugh. And I could go through a whole list of them, okay?
Yeah, all right. How about DiFi? Continue going.
Yeah, go.
She waited till we were closed. And then she probably leaked it. But, you know, who am I to say? But she probably leaked it based on her very bad body language the other day. But more importantly, in a sense, for her to have waited that period of time, and now for you Democrats, and I guess I'm including you too, the media, right? I consider you a part of the Democrat Party.
But that's great. That's my favorite line. Joe in on 57.
Yes, hi. You know, everybody, you know, they're making a big deal out of Kavanaugh's drinking, but they never made a big deal out of President Clinton when he was in college smoking marijuana and did not inhale it, or Barack Obama when he was in high school being a pot fiend and cokehead.
Yeah, that's right. How
or
about
John
Boehner. How about Barack Obama's Chum Gang?
Yeah, when he's a state senator, he hit the peace pipe a number of times.
And then John Boehner when he was Speaker of the House and he was a drinker, and even Nancy Pelosi when she was Speaker of the House, flying back and forth to California. Her bar tab was over $100,000. She stuck the taxpayers with bottles of booze.
Not to mention her addiction to plastic surgery. Thanks for the call, Joe. Good point.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. See Heather McDonald, James O'Keefe, and Sheriff David Clark at Freedom Summit 2018. Get your tickets at freedomsummitchicago.com.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Turn our attention locally here, and that means a look at the Chicago mayor's race. Chuy Garcia gone.
Wait, on a very special Dan and Amy, remembering the mayoral candidacy of Chuy Garcia. How long did that last?
Flew by.
I mean, it went, if you blinked, you missed it.
Yeah. He's going to focus on that
congressional seat that
was handed off to him by El Gallito.
Hey, any reaction from El Gallito? Because remember, he's like, I am determined to make him mayor.
So then I suppose El Gallito is stopping his petition circulation for Chuy? I don't know.
Oh, that was so.
Nah, the histrionics are fun. The theater is fun, isn't it? The financial position of the actual city of Chicago,
yeah,
not so fun.
What are the numbers?
Worst
How bad
governed,
is it?
Worst governed city, worst governed big city in the country, and it's not close by every quality of life metric. And you know, you can pretend that the entire city is the Mag Mile.
Yeah,
the entire city is. A half a dozen wards. But as Paul Vallis rightly points out in this economic development plan of sorts that he put out yesterday, only about 15 to 20% of the city is thriving. And as I've said for years, And maybe nobody believes me except Paul Vallis, or at least is willing to admit to it, as he did. You can't have 80% of the city burn down around you and pretend that the 20% in which you live is not going to be affected. That is, it's folly and it's irresponsible. So for more on what Paul proposes, we're pleased to be joined by a Chicago mayoral candidate, former CPS superintendent, Paul Vallis. Paul, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Well, good morning. You summed up my introduction quite accurately. About 80% of the city is not growing. I think there's only strong, robust growth in about 5 or 6 wards and maybe 10 wards altogether. And for the balance, there's either no growth in terms of investment, major investment, but in many of the wards, they're in depression-like conditions. So the city can't this hurts the city in so many ways. It means that those people who pay taxes or pay high taxes are going to pay even higher taxes. It has an impact on crime. It has an impact on social disruption. I mean, you know, all the ills. You know, we're only as strong as our weakest neighborhood.
So your proposal is to sort of take advantage of the legislation at the federal level that was authored by Senators Cory Booker and Tim Scott, this kind of new opportunity/enterprise zone legislation. And you think you can take $1 billion in TIF funds from the city and leverage that for $10 billion in private investment in some of Chicago's poorest neighborhoods. Explain, please.
Yes. Well, first of all, absolutely. As you know, in the Trump tax bill, there was a provision put in to provide massive incentives, tax incentives, to stimulate development in underdeveloped areas. And nationwide, there's 8,700 zones or geographic areas that have been designated. In Chicago, 133 have. Of course, designating is one thing. Actually, mobilizing to secure the investment is another. And the tax incentives, in a nutshell, are you can, for all practical purposes, shelter your capital gains tax. You can avoid the capital gains tax by investing in the zones, and in any income you generate, any profit that you generate from that investment, you get to keep tax-free. So that's a huge stimulus. And the problem with poor communities in the city of Chicago is the lack of capital. I mean, you can create all the TIFs you want in those areas, but if there's no prospect for growth, because there's really no infusion of capital investment, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, but
at the end of the day, what I'm...
Yeah, but just to hold there, because, I mean, the kind of the enterprise zone, opportunity zone, I know this federal provision makes it a little bit different and has a little bit more sense of urgency, and these are good times mm-hmm. and all that jazz. But here's the thing. Enterprise zones, opportunity zones, not exactly a new idea. And there's a little bit of cart before the horse with these proposals, it seems to me, from previous experience hearing these things out and seeing them attempt to be put into action, which is you can incentivize me all day long. I'm not investing money, even if it's free in terms of tax-free, and without any prospect of ROI, because you're telling me or you're trying to incentivize me to invest money that in places that are unsafe, where there is no possibility for ROI.
Well, Dan, as you know, and I was on your show, I've been on your show a couple times, when I've talked about other things that the city needs to do in terms of improving its schools, in terms of, I mean, I detailed in very specific terms what I would do to revitalize the police department. So, you know, so we can spend an hour talking about this holistically or focus specifically on how you take advantage of these massive federal incentives that are available, because past enterprise zone programs were very light on incentives. They really didn't provide the type of incentives that would stimulate investment. And what I'm saying is there's 133 zones. Now, does that mean that that investors are going to invest in all those zones? No. But if they invest in half the zones, and if you have, instead of growth in 5 wards, you have a growth in 15 or 20 or 25 wards, that expands the economic base. That, as you have articulated time and time again, will generate kind of natural revenue growth without the type of revenue growth that's incurred when you're constantly raising taxes. So there are no other alternatives to develop these areas. And we're talking about areas that are covering probably about maybe a third of the city, because the opportunity zones geographically cover about a third of the city. And let me also point out, what I'm talking about is the city diverting a portion of the TIF money. And as you know, the city diverts $660 million in property tax money for TIFs already. These are existing TIFs, and using it with investors to invest in the zones, and then allowing the city to be a equity investor. So what happens is if those areas grow, if that investment grows, the city not only gets reimbursed, but the city also gets to profit, particularly if those investments profit. And as you well know, right now, all they do with TIF money is just hand it out. You know,
yeah.
$50 million to the Wintrust Arena, $40 million to a hotel that's converting to an apartment complex with no equity whatsoever.
And what about your plan for police and fire pension debt?
Well, you know, on October 15th, what? Yeah, Amy, on October 15th, I'm going to speak before the City Club, mm-hmm. and I'm going to speak, I'm going to offer a very specific comprehensive solutions to, in effect, address the issue of the city's financial crisis. And I'm going to talk about what needs to be done to get the pension debt under control and to address that issue, while at the same time, how to construct a budget that will not result in draconian property tax increases. And I'm going to do that well before the primary, and I'm going to do it on October 15th when I don't have to sit on a stage with 12 other people and have 60 seconds to answer very complicated questions.
So let's go back to this proposal that you've put forward. You know, I've had this conversation with LaShawn Ford, Westside State Representative, and mm-hmm. you know, the mantra of the sort of politicians in Chicago on the West and South Side is Marshall Plan for the city, Marshall Plan for the city. And my point with Ford is, look, I'm willing to spend money on schools. I'm willing to spend money on social service providers. I'm willing to spend money to attract investment. But I'm not willing to spend it on models that have proven unsuccessful, that are government-centric. I want to see, and there are models in the city, social service space, K through 12 education space, Urban Prep Academy, Tim King's operation. I mention these all
right.
the time. That should be scaled. And I would say the same thing here about
certainly.
About entrepreneurship. Are there models that could be scaled so we're not doing the, we'll underwrite a Whole Foods in Inglewood and call that economic development?
Listen, I agree. You know, creating a $10 million TIF for a Whole Foods in Inglewood is not economic development. The whole objective behind the opportunity zones, which is why it was in the Trump tax package, is to provide massive tax breaks to stimulate investment. You know, the investors are still going to decide what they want to invest in. That means, are they going to invest in all the opportunity zones? The answer is no. They're going to invest where they think their investment can be most secure. The city, by becoming an investor with the private investors, they only enhance that investment, and they generate the possibility to raise even more money. And as you well know, there are other tax incentives available. There's the Workforce Opportunity Tax Credit. There are the EDGE tax programs. There's the Workforce mm-hmm. Opportunity Innovation Act job training subsidies. So there are other federal incentives there that you can apply to make these investments even to reduce the risk for these investments. So I'm not talking about the government just setting up a program where they're handing out money. I'm talking about the city working with private investors to take advantage of massive tax incentives. And in about 3 years, those tax incentives are going to be fading away. In other words, you got a three-year window to take advantage of it. If anybody else out there has a better idea to develop these underdeveloped areas that are in need of capital, well, they've got to put up or shut up.
Well,
because there's nothing else out there. So I'm not going to. So I'm going to, you know, I'm not going to say, oh, I'm not going to take advantage of these incentives because it's in the Trump tax bill. I'll take advantage of any break, any federal incentive out there is going to benefit our communities.
Yeah, but Paul, as you know, I mean, being a guy who focuses on the structural things, the structural tax and regulatory environment matters. And so one thing that could be done, and this is for residents and business owners alike, but especially commercial, since commercial subsidizes residential in Chicago and Cook County, is property taxes. Make this a lower property tax environment, lower the barriers to entry in terms of tax and regulatory policy in the city.
Yeah, you know, I agree 100%. You know, it's like housing. Let me give you an example if I have a second. It's like on housing. You know, they talk about the need for affordable housing units in the city of Chicago, and there's a need. So we're going to go out and we're going to subsidize affordable housing. Well, and then they provide immense subsidies that don't generate much affordable housing. Well, if they just reduce the blocks, the restrictions on landlords' ability to convert their garden apartments to garden apartments, they could generate 126,000 apartments. affordable apartments throughout the city. Isn't that affordable housing? And that wouldn't cost the city a dime. That would simply be, you know, changing the regulations around or modifying the regulations to stimulate economic development. You know, when I present my plan on October 15th, I'm going to talk about reducing regulation, and I'm also going to talk about capping property taxes as part of an overall financial strategy for the city, because you're absolutely right. As long as we tax and regulate ourselves to death, that's going to stifle any sort of real long-term investment.
And would you promise not to raise our property taxes?
Well, you know,
or you don't want to
anyone would be
Bush
irresponsible.
Yourself.
Yeah, you know, anybody would be irresponsible for making that promise, because we are statutorily mandated to fund their pensions. But let me say what I will promise.
Yes.
I will promise to cap our property taxes at the rate of inflation of 5%, whichever is less, because I think that is doable. And if people know that their property taxes are going to be capped and that they're not going to get these draconian reassessments and these big increases every year, both individuals and businesses, I think that'll make the city more hospitable place for investors.
No, you misunderstood Amy, Paul. Amy just wants to make sure her property taxes don't increase. If you could just make sure her property taxes don't increase, then
no
she's
problem,
fine.
Amy.
Give her the Luis Gutierrez treatment there. All right, he is Paul Vallis, candidate for mayor of the city of Chicago. The website with the details of the plan that we were discussing and a lot more is vallisforallchicago.com. Paul, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks to you and your listeners. Have a great day.
Thanks. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
So you're watching The Keepers. I mean, we are in the kind of repressed memory week. So
there might be something to the repressed
yeah,
memory.
So you were watching The Keepers, this series about
who killed this
nun.
This nun.
It's an excellent series. And now you think you may be guilty of murder.
I'm not guilty of murder.
Oh.
I never thought I could have a suppressed memory, but it came back to me. I think there's something buried in my backyard. Not we'll be right back. Well, not where I currently live, but where I was renting.
Did you watch Pet Sematary? Is that why you think something's
well,
buried
maybe,
in your backyard?
Well, I just because I'm very anal retentive about my lawn. And when I came home
okay,
one
Gran
night.
Okay, Gran Torino.
No, I am. I always tell people to get off my lawn. I'm off my front porch.
With
but
a
I
shotgun.
Came home and there was about a 4x6 area that was, it seemed like a shallow grave had just been.
Sure. All right, boys, get the shovels. What's the address?
I can't say.
Is it where you live now or
no,
is it a former?
I've stayed on the same street, but I've lived in 4 different places on the same street.
Mm-hmm. And it's on this street.
I live
in
the diner now.
It's in Lakeview, though.
Yes.
A former resident of yours in Lakeview, you believe now after watching The Keepers, there may be a body buried in that backyard.
I'm going to have to contact authority. I'm not kidding. Okay. I'm telling you, it was a suppressed memory that is now.
All right, Mike Scott, you've got the exclusive on this one.
I do.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Anybody on the left interested in the alleged conduct of Keith Ellison, the confirmed conduct of 2018 election cycle it girl of the left, Beto O'Rourke in Texas, the Democrat nominee for Senate against Ted Cruz.
I saw him with Willie Nelson over the weekend. He had a big fundraising concert.
That's right.
Who's got a name? Beto. What is that? Have you ever heard somebody with that name before?
It's not his Christian name, but yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, excuse me. Common spelling,
well,
Dan?
Let's start with Keith Ellison.
Yeah.
Keith Ellison's been cleared.
Cleared.
You want to talk about questions about the independence of an investigation?
Didn't the DNC, weren't they in charge of the investigation?
Not the DNC. He's a deputy chairman of the DNC.
Right.
An attorney who's a partner at a Minnesota law firm where also the top lawyer for the Minnesota Democratic Farmer Labor Party resides, did the investigation. Susan Ellingstad is the partner at this Minnesota law firm. Her partner is the top lawyer for Minnesota's Democrat Farmer Labor Party, Keith Ellison, the nominee for attorney general of that party. Okay. But listen to this. Ready?
Okay.
Here's the conclusion. Remember, he's two women have alleged physical abuse at the hands of Keith Ellison. And we'll get to Karen Monahan, his ex-girlfriend.
Yeah, because she tweeted yesterday about that tape again.
So here's the statement in the report filed by Ms. Ellingstad, the attorney. An allegation standing alone is not necessarily sufficient to conclude that conduct occurred.
Oh.
You don't say.
Okay, keep going. Are we talking about Kavanaugh or are we talking about Keith Ellison?
Well, one standard applies to Keith Ellison, and that standard does not apply to Brett Kavanaugh by the same people.
All right.
The difference is, and so please take judicial notice of this, leftists who may be listening, and we have some. We apply the same standard here. And I've defended Keith Ellison in the face of these charges because of the inconsistency of Ms. Monahan, his ex-girlfriend, but we'll get to that. Let me repeat Ms. Ellingstad's statement. I'm quoting her.
Okay.
An allegation standing alone is not necessarily sufficient to conclude that conduct occurred, particularly where the accusing party declines to produce supporting evidence that she herself asserts exists. And I agree with that. Even though I find Keith Ellison wholly objectionable, that doesn't mean I think he should wear the jacket for something that he didn't do. And I don't know what he did or didn't do, but there's a lot of questions about Karen Monahan, his ex-girlfriend, and this video that she and her son assert exists of Keith Ellison basically pushing her around.
So a reporter from the Daily Caller asked her again, why won't you release this alleged Ellison abuse video? And she tweeted, you're not entitled to my pain and trauma. You are not entitled to see me getting dragged when my body is being exposed in more ways than one. This is my trauma. I dealt with the abuse. I have already shared more than I was originally comfortable with. Hashtag why I didn't report.
Well, okay, but the problem is that she's made a number of statements on the topic, including that the video didn't exist at all, that it was on a jump drive that was lost during a move or some such thing, or lost from a storage locker.
Storage locker. And then now she has it, but she's not. You're not entitled to her pain, Dan. But I say if it's there and you want redemption, or you want him to pay for his sins, release the tape.
You don't have to release it.
Give it to somebody.
Well, as this investigator points out, there's the opportunity for it to be viewed privately to substantiate the claim. She's the one who made the claim that a video existed. Mm-hmm. Then she made the claim that it didn't. Now she's making the claim that it does, but you're not entitled to it.
So they ended the investigation after they asked her again, hand her over the tape, and she said no.
So it doesn't exonerate Ellison, but it does say the claim is unsubstantiated, and so how do you move forward? Oof. Boy, if that's the standard that applies to Ellison, it's sort of curious why those same individuals rallying to the defense of Keith Ellison and setting the standard in his case, why they wouldn't apply the same standard to Brett Kavanaugh. Gosh, I wonder if there's something else afoot in the Kavanaugh matter politically that makes it different in their minds from Keith Ellison. And thus they're willing to destroy Brett Kavanaugh and everyone around him, his family included, in the name of politics and in contravention of this standard that they otherwise support when it is applied in the Ellison case, right? Karen Monahan has said it. Don't believe me. Karen Monahan has said it. Where are all my Democrat friends?
Yeah, she said, my party has failed me. You know, where are they when I need them? Well, they're not there.
312-642-5600, Turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, Turnkey.pro text line. You know, certainly just make sure that you pick up these stories and these remarkable statements that are being made in the context of these other cases, and ask your liberal friends, like Amy does in Lakeview, to help us make sense of this. Just help me reconcile it. It's difficult. Beto O'Rourke. He's, again, the it girl for the Democrats this cycle, much like Barack Obama was in 2004.
And for those who've been living under a rock, Beto O'Rourke is running against Senator Ted Cruz.
Yeah. So he's had a pair of felony arrests in his mid to late 20s, including a reckless drunk driving incident, which he crashed a car and allegedly tried to flee from the scene. He's admitted, obviously, to the drunk driving. I mean, what can he do? It's a legal record. Right. And, you know, said it was a mistake and apologized and so forth.
That's all right. Okay.
Andy McCarthy writes about it in New York Post. The cases appear to have mysteriously disappeared without serious prosecution. O'Rourke continues to deny basic facts outlined in at least one police report with respect to the drunk driving incident, the issue of fleeing the scene. Also, O'Rourke was arrested for allegedly burglarizing a campus building at UTEP, University of Texas, El Paso.
Oh, I love that campus.
He claimed the incident was a college prank, but he wasn't a college student at the time.
Beto O'Rourke. Was he at UTEP? He was just living in El Paso, or he was there for the weekend and decided to steal something from UTEP?
In 2012, as a first-term state rep, a member of Congress, congressman, Beto O'Rourke skirted a 2012 law that barred members of Congress from profiting from IPOs of stock based on information not available to the public. O'Rourke pulled the old ignorance of the memo defense, didn't see the memo from the House Ethics Committee warning members to avoid such IPOs as Twitter, which was about to launch. He bought Twitter shares, quickly sold many of them as the stock rocketed higher in value. O'Rourke fessed up to the Ethics Committee that he engaged in several IPO trades. The congressman agreed to sell off IPO shares he was still holding and send the Treasury Department a check for what he said was the amount of his profits. And so the matter was dropped, and he was sorry again. I mean, is there any interest in his conduct as he runs for the United States Senate?
He's from El Paso, by the way, and he's a congressman from El Paso.
Yeah.
Well, just in case.
And so what about any interest in his case? Also, he's now apologizing. This is when the left cannibalizes them, their own. Apologizing for once criticizing a Broadway musical when he was 19 years old. This is how silly it is.
What?
He wrote a review of the Will Rogers Follies for the Columbia University Daily Spectator, the student newspaper.
Excuse me.
I mean, honestly.
What, I sneeze? And this is when you say, God bless you, Gesundheit.
It was dramatic.
Well, it hurt. I had to get it
out. It was a Broadway quality sneeze.
I had jazz hands while I was doing it.
O'Rourke's review of the Will Rogers Follies.
Yes, sir.
Not the best musical, but he said one of the most glaring examples of the sickening excesses and moral degradations of our culture. Boy, that must have been some
musical.
Well, some bastardization of the Will Rogers Follies. He bemoaned, quote, the actresses. Quote, perma-smile actresses whose only qualification seemed to be their phenomenally large breasts and tight buttocks.
Did he say the buttocks?
He did.
I like the tight buttocks.
And he's...
Keep it tight.
And now he's apologizing for making those comments as a 19-year-old about women's physical features, these actresses' physical features. It's funny. The D.C. press corps... That's a story in Politico. The D.C. press corps, you know, insider trading, not a big deal. Drunk driving, leaving the scene of an accident, no. Felony burglary on a college campus, no. Did you notice a woman has large breasts and a tight buttock? Oh, my God. That's what they focus on. It is
so crazy.
What dimension are we in?
What happened to America?
I mean, this is like, you ever remember on Cheers, Frasier turns to Cliff after one of Cliff's ridiculous...
rants?
His observations or his phony baloney anecdotes about history or whatever. He says, Cliff, what color is the sky in your world? That's what I want to ask the left. What color is the sky in your world? Jeff in Homer Glen, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. I'm a voter here in Illinois, unfortunately. Yeah. And in our third congressional district, the Republicans, I have a guy named Arthur J. Jones, who's a known neo-Nazi. Yeah, how come we don't have any better options in a year where we're trying to keep control of the House?
Because the Illinois Republican Party is...
asleep at the wheel.
Is incompetent, buffoonish, complicit, compromised, pathetic. That's why.
Well, they're allowing a write-in. Any suggestions?
Anybody.
Anybody. Put yourself down.
A write-in's not going to beat Dan Lipinski, so, anybody. I don't know. Put Homer Glenn, put Steve Balich there. I don't know. Thanks for the call, Art. Jeff, excuse me.
Put yourself in.
Yeah,
They said, and then I confronted him about it, and they said, he snuck in at the last minute. We didn't see him coming. Art Jones.
No, those Nazis are sneaky.
Yeah, yeah, real sneaky.
You have how many?
5 minutes before the deadline. They he snuck in, Amy. We couldn't stop him.
You have Republican incumbents, so they're going to be the Republican nominees in their districts.
Yeah.
And then you got a handful of challenger races. This is in Chicago Metro.
Uh-huh.
He's a perennial candidate.
Yeah.
Snuck in. It's a real good defense. It sounds like something Beto O'Rourke would say. John and Palatine.
Hey, Dan and Amy. I just wanted to say I believe the left seems to prosecute with shame and innuendo, and the right relies on evidence and fact.
Yeah, and evidence and facts are losing, it seems, in today's America.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy, we'll keep you updated all morning as memories come back to Amy Jacobson regarding the murder she didn't commit and the body that may be buried.
I just said there's something buried in my backyard. It was a suppressed memory that came to me.
Yeah.
It was in a rental property. I've already gotten 2 text messages.
Do they know?
Neighbors. Well,
are they digging?
Not yet. I have to show them the exact location. We shouldn't make light of this. This isn't...
No, absolutely
but
not.
But I just remember at the time I was busy and I was raising 2 young kids, changing diapers.
Can't keep track of bodies in your yard when you got 2 kids in the house.
Well, I was looking for work. I was depressed. There was a whole bunch of stuff going on. I didn't have time.
Yeah.
I looked at it and I said, I don't have time for that.
I don't have time for that corpse.
I mean, what do you think this is? I could only handle... so much stuff. I was moving, getting divorced. It was awful. Then that?
Yeah.
That would have put me over the edge. So I suppressed it. Mm-hmm. And then years later, when I'm watching The Keepers, things started coming back to me.
Yeah. But do you have any more details that you
could share?
Well,
you're scaring because you're like, why'd you kill somebody? I said, I'm not saying I didn't kill somebody. I'm not homicidal. Uh-huh. I'm just saying somebody dumped something in my backyard, I think.
Do you know who did? Do you remember who did it? Can you
provide a description
of the suspect?
I don't have security cameras.
No, but these are memories that are flooding back.
I didn't see anybody do anything.
Well, you just said somebody may have dumped it.
Well, somebody dug a hole in my backyard and it wasn't me. That's all I can tell you, officer.
You didn't see the person dig
no,
the hole?
No, God, no.
How long was the hole there?
I don't know.
So
until the grass grew over it again, but then it was rainy, it was cold out, and then it snowed. Which would have been physically impossible for me. Do you know how hard it is? Have you ever tried to dig a hole? Well, you're probably not handy like me. But, I mean, if you ever tried to
What do you think? This is the first hole I dug?
I mean,
get the lime.
It's hard. It's very physical work.
So, let me understand something. So there's a hole in your backyard that may or may not have a body in it, and you have past experience digging such holes.
Yeah,
are you sure that you're not having a dissociative episode where you're projecting onto an unnamed suspect a hole you actually dug and a body you actually placed in that hole? Isn't that right, Mrs. Jacobson?
All I could tell you was in the 80s, I dug a hole for my cat, Snuggles, who got hit by a car on River Road, and it was hard to dig that hole.
The Snuggles defense isn't going to cut it this time, Jacobson. Look. This is going to be much easier if you just tell us what happened. If you cooperate, you show us
I'll show
what you did.
The area of concern. That's
give the family some closure.
But the problem is new people now live in that house, and they I don't want to bother them by tearing up their backyard.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it'd be real inconvenient for them. That's what you're worried about, their inconvenience.
On the witness stand, I would swear that Amy Jacobson had a shovel.
I don't have a shovel. I don't own
I
a
would
shovel.
Swear.
You just said you dug holes. What, you dug holes
no,
with?
No, that was
in your hands?
In my house in Mount Prospect.
What did you do with the shovel in the 80s?
Maybe it was a trowel, but I'm sure it was silver and shaped like a shovel.
I don't have a shovel. Oh, now I own a shovel, though.
Oh.
Well, now you own a shovel.
Oh, okay.
Oh, my God.
Are you sure they didn't trim the trees in your backyard? And they came in and to trim trees off the power lines.
When I lived there, again, I was renting. There was one large pine tree and then cypress trees to the right. There was nothing in between. It was like 4x6. And I remember looking at it and thinking, oh, dear Lord, I don't have time for that. And then I blocked it out.
Look, if you just tell me what happened, I can talk to the DA.
As your defense attorney, I would say, that thing is not on. Do not speak.
All right. I think we're close to cracking this case wide open.
And then they had a Law and Order episode where a reporter went swimming with a guy. And, I mean, it was just all bad, the whole episode 16, whatever, 18.
Mm-hmm. Do you sometimes...
My kids saw that and were horrified. I said, I didn't murder anybody. Because in the Law and Order episode, the reporter ended
Look,
up being the
if
murderer.
It was an accident, we can talk to the
God,
DA.
I didn't
just
hurt.
Tell us what happened.
I'm not homicidal. I don't know what to tell you. I'm not that
Look.
Person. I'm just saying, what a perfect place to bury bones or a body.
Yes, but you were under tremendous stress at this time.
Exactly.
Right? And so you really don't remember what you possibly did during that time period.
Oh, my God.
Miss Jacobson, isn't it true that you on this show have suggested that the Forest Preserve is a great place to bury a body as well? You seem to have an obsession with concealing the locations of dead bodies.
No, I can stipulate
I'm
to that testimony.
About animals. It's the perfect place to bury. Oh, to commit a crime, the perfect place is Forest Preserve, because the Forest Preserve police kind of asleep at the wheel, if you know what I mean.
Why'd you do it? Just tell us why you did it.
Oh, look at the time.
You're going to feel so much better. Just let it go. This is over.
Do anything.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Out of the morning, Dan and Amy, Georgetown professor Christine Fair. We've talked about her before. She's got quite the potty mouth on her. Christine Fair tweeting. She's an associate professor at Georgetown Security Studies Program. She tweeted over the weekend in response to Lindsey Graham's Joseph Welch moment during the Kavanaugh hearing, as well as just the sum total of the hearings themselves and what Republicans had to say. She said, Christine Fair tweeted, all of them deserve miserable deaths. While feminists laugh as they take their last gasps, bonus, we castrate their corpses and feed them to swine. Yes. She also tweeted, look at this chorus of entitled white men justifying a serial rapist's arrogated entitlement. Hilariously, Georgetown University said in response to an inquiry about the good professor's tweets that they respect Fair's right to freedom of speech, but also expect her to keep her classrooms free of bias. Oh, yes.
Oh, okay.
That's going to happen. Remember, she said other things. She's in 2017, she came under fire sending messages to a former Georgetown professor, Asra Nomani. Nomani claimed that Fair began harassing her after she admitted to voting for Trump for president. I've written you off as a human being. Your vote helped normalize Nazis in D.C. What don't you understand, you clueless dolt? F you, go to hell. And profanity is punctuates Fair's Twitter page. Unfortunately, Twitter suspended her account.
Oh, really?
And I am starting a campaign. I just tweeted myself, starting a campaign to have Christine Fair's account reinstated.
Yeah.
Because I'm from the Brandeis School that sunlight is the best disinfectant. And I think the nation needs to see how polluted our college campuses are, the hallowed halls of academia in places like Georgetown, putatively a good school, whatever that means anymore. See who's there. See how polluted it is when you have people like Christine Fair who are professors at colleges with reputations like Georgetown. Oh, in a related story in academia, Kavanaugh teaching at Harvard. Remember how he said, love teaching at law school? That's probably over thanks to Senate Democrats on the
coaching.
Judiciary Committee.
Yeah, I love coaching. Have been for 7 years, fifth and sixth grade girls basketball. That might be over with.
His class at Harvard has been canceled. Brett Kavanaugh's.
Really?
Course. For more on this topic and other Kavanaugh-related issues, we're pleased to be joined again by Roger Kimball, who's the editor of the New Criterion and columnist for PJ Media, and hails from the intellectual realm of East Coast, Eastern Seaboard high-mindedness himself. Roger, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, guys. Nice to be with you. I should point out, however, that I grew up in Maine, the rural fastnesses of Maine, so I haven't been thoroughly marinated in the East Coast.
You're lucked out. What about, so everything Kavanaugh predicted that actually was occurring to him in real time on Thursday is now coming to fruition, including the Democrats moving the goalposts, which is all their histrionics Thursday about, turn to Don McGahn, as Dick Durbin said, and tell him to start the FBI investigation. So how do you react to what we're getting from Democrats now that they got what they wanted, courtesy of Flake and Coons?
Well, there's an old Chinese saying, be careful what you wish for. And I suspect that the Democrats are going to rue the day they asked for an FBI investigation, because, of course, what you say to a journalist is neither here nor there. You're not under oath. But what you say to any federal officer is subject to U.S. Code 1001, which says that it's a felony to lie or misrepresent what you say if you're talking to the FBI or the Judiciary Committee or any federal officer. I see that Senator Grassley has already referred one person to the Department of Justice for a criminal complaint because of without foundation, alleged that Brett Kavanaugh had assaulted somebody on a boat in Newport. And I think we're going to see a lot more of this. I would love to have the FBI have a nice sit down with Christina Blasey Ford and find out exactly, what happened. Of course, she doesn't have to talk to them, and if she's wise, she won't. But I suspect that we're going to find out that Deborah Ramirez Ms. Swetnick, who's offered up to the world by Michael Avenatti, that they're just, Democratic shills lying. And if they talk to the FBI, it's likely that they will find themselves with a new orange suit for the next 5 years.
Well, Roger, you did
be gratifying.
Yeah, you saw Swetnick's interview with Kate Snow, correct?
I did not.
Oh,
I
well, she not. Pretty much said, because she asked it was Brett Kavanaugh the one who assaulted you, and she didn't know. She's like, I don't know. I can't say with certainty.
Yeah.
So I don't know if she's going to be questioned by the FBI. Democrats gave a list of 24 people, 24 witnesses they want questioned. But who do we know so far that's been questioned? Mark Judge was yesterday. Luddington.
Mark Judge is the only one I know. Yeah,
Luddington was, and Deborah Ramirez.
Yeah, but I know it's, and as we watch this malignant circus unfold, it's difficult to keep in mind how bizarre this whole process is. I mean, the spectacle of this obtuse Senator Whitehouse parsing Brett Kavanaugh's high school yearbook on the floor of the Senate was preposterous. Oh my gosh, what does Booth mean? It's just ridiculous. Now, of course, it's even worse than this. I mean, yes, they are trying to destroy Brett Kavanaugh. But I think, you know, John Hinderaker had a very insightful piece the other day at Powerline, I think, when he pointed out that the fact that Brett Kavanaugh is a man of spotless reputation, a distinguished jurist whose integrity was hitherto unquestioned by anyone, that fact makes the destruction of Brett Kavanaugh not a bug, but a feature. The point is, they can do this to anyone.
Right.
And the moral is, you better back off and cede power to us. We, the progressive left, are the only ones who really deserve to govern. You conservatives, you know, you can be sort of window dressing, but you don't really get a voice in this. Now, I think that people are actually beginning to wake up to this. And, you know, they have declared war. They have declared war on the rule of law, on the Constitution, on due process. And you can see people waking up, like Lindsey Graham gave the performance of his career during the hearings last week. And I suspect this whole thing now is going to be a huge, huge backfire for the left.
Well,
Kavanaugh will be confirmed, and the midterms are not going to be a blue wave, believe me.
Well, yeah, and Mitt McConnell said yesterday that the vote is going to happen this week. He confirmed that there will be a confirmation vote this week after the FBI report is filed. And the other dynamic, it seems to me, Republicans need to continue to explain is, and Bill McGovern sort of gets to this in his piece in the Wall Street Journal about this all being, that this, you know, going after Kavanaugh in a way they did in Gorsuch is because Roe is at stake, Roe v. Wade.
Yeah.
And that the fact is over the last 50 years, Democrats, the left, have been able to gain through the courts what they couldn't the legislatures, and now they see that in jeopardy. So it's all hands on deck, at, you know, and every bullet fired.
Yes. Well, I think that's true. I think that's true. But I think it goes even, it's even worse than that. Bad though that is. I mean, it is unquestionably the case that in the background is Roe v. Wade. Although, I mean, you know, I believe Kavanaugh when he says that it's this settled law and he's a constitutionalist who follows the law. But, you know, that's, you know, just a you know, one kind of sideline here. I mean, the irony is, of course, that Brett Kavanaugh is not a fire-breathing right-wing ideologue. He's a very judicious, impartial judge, which is why everybody loves him. All his law clerks, everybody he's ever worked with or worked for, or who has worked, you know, or has worked for him, he, you know, he has got a sterling reputation for fairness. So that's the irony. I mean, you know, the Democrats could have done a lot worse than Brett Kavanaugh, and perhaps they will eventually someday. One can only hope. But
well, the other thing, though, and this points to Brett Kavanaugh as well as to Lindsey Graham. There's two. I mean, Kavanaugh is a conservative and an originalist, and I get that. But he's also part of the Beltway establishment and has been for a long time.
Yes,
and he thought collegiality was going to be enough to get him through because everybody loved him. And now he has gotten a strong dose of what the cultural Marxist left actually is. And so is Lindsey Graham. And hopefully this is a message to the other Beltway creatures that are on the R side.
Yes, I hope so. I hope it's a wake up call. But you know, behind all this, you know, Roe v. Wade is one thing, but and you're absolutely right. The you know, for the last several decades, the Democrats have been used to using the Supreme Court to circumvent the will of the people. The Supreme Court has become their legislative bludgeon to progress to you know, foster a progressive agenda. And that would definitely be in jeopardy. But even beyond that, I think it's that, you know, you saw this, many of the Democratic senators, when, you know, summing up their feelings, why they weren't going to vote for Brett Kavanaugh. A leitmotif was he was picked by Donald Trump. Yeah. And the original sin here is that Donald Trump's election is held to be illegitimate. Why? Because he was elected without their permission and over their strenuous objections. He's not of their tribe. He somehow, you know, despite all of their careful plans, managed to get elected. And not only that, he is willing to react to their assaults. Instead of rolling over into a little ball and whimpering in the corner like other Republicans tend to do, he stands up to them. If he's attacked, he attacks back. And this I'm afraid that what we have just seen over these last 2 weeks with this disgusting display is all-out war. And I'm happy to say that I see our side finally standing up for itself. Senator Grassley has done, you know, some very good things in the last week or so in standing up for the process. And I think that the Democrats are going to rue the day they open this Pandora's box.
All right. He is Roger Kimball, editor of the New Criterion and columnist for PJ Media. Roger, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to podcasts of Dan and Amy from the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Amy.
Wait, I thought that was Holly from Hudson. That high school picture when she was 15 years old.
What are you talking about?
Christine Blasey Ford, or Blasey at the time.
Yeah.
With the glasses and the...
Yeah.
That's her.
Yeah.
Okay, because Holly from Hudson, who listens to the show religiously.
Yeah.
She tweeted that I thought that was a picture of her in high school.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
No, that picture has been making its way around.
Well, what do you look like when you're 15? Can you bring in your high school yearbook, please? Because I'd like to go over it, see if there's any boofing going on,
exactly,
or Ralphing.
Yeah,
or
sure. All the
Devil's
codes.
Triangle. What do we have going there?
Mm-hmm.
At Bennett Academy. Yeah.
This is an important court case for you uniform wearers.
Oh.
You know, if you wear a uniform on your job.
Oh, you mean activewear? That's my
well, that's your sort of de facto uniform, but I mean like a formal uniform that's regulated by a employee handbook.
Oh, okay.
Say like at In-N-Out Burger.
Yeah, or McDonald's or other places.
Employees at the Austin location of In-N-Out Burger wore Fight for $15, you know, Fight for 15 campaign buttons, the minimum wage thing. Management told them to remove them, citing the dress code, which required 9 different parts: white pants, white shirt, white socks, black shoes, black belt, red apron, gold apron pin, a company-issued name tag, and a hat. Wearing any type of pin or stickers is not permitted. However, the Fifth Circuit disagreed with In-N-Out Burger and said that certain expressions of clothing that are fall under a, quote, protected concerted activity exception to an employer's supremacy when it comes to your uniform.
We need to talk. Do you know what this is about?
My flair?
Yeah. Or your lack of flair, because I'm counting and I only see 15 pieces. Let me ask you a question, Joanna. What do you think of a person who only does the bare minimum?
Huh, what do I think? You know what, Stan? If you want me to wear 37 pieces of flair like your pretty boy over there, Brian, why don't you just make the minimum 37 pieces of flair?
Well, I thought I remembered you saying that you wanted to express yourself.
Yeah, and now Joanna can, and she doesn't have to be harassed by Stan, thanks to the Fifth Circuit.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and our next guest has spent an entire career leading up to this moment. Criminal profiler who, along with his team, broke the Unabomber case and captured Ted Kaczynski. The author of a series of books, Journey to the Center of the Mind. Also, Manhunt is the Netflix memorialization of the Unabomber case, and it's excellent. Paul Bettany and Sam Worthington plays James Fitzgerald. But this prepares him for perhaps the greatest case of his career and a comeback, because he's retired.
Yeah. Huh?
I assume the FBI has reached out to enlist him to crack the case of the 1985 bar fight at Demery's in New Haven, Connecticut.
Yeah, I want to hear all about it. It involved ice, correct?
Yeah, ice.
Don't you ice me out, baby.
It involved
ice, baby.
It involved UB40. Remember that?
Oh, that's right. Because he went to that concert, right? They were at a concert, then they went to the bar.
Or did he? Did he go to that concert?
How could that concert make you angry? It kind of mellows me out. But...
James Fitzgerald, thank you so much for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Amy. And yeah, based on that bar fight, that's why, darn it, we should abolish ICE right now.
This is exactly.
Well, what happened with this bar fight?
What happened with this bar fight? I mean, what are you talking about?
I mean, I...
I've certainly been in... Yeah, I'm sorry.
I've been in my share of bar fights, and it looks like back in the day, not
recently,
unfortunately. But, I mean, you know, late high school, college, I mean, those things happen. Yeah. And I just read one quick media review of it. I don't think that's going to go too far in this whole scenario that's being painted here about Judge Kavanaugh.
Did any of your bar fights include Charles Chad Luddington, or do you wish they had?
Yeah, he wouldn't be my wingman in a bar fight, especially not 25 or 40 years later, whatever the heck it's been. So thanks anyway, Chad. I appreciate it.
All right.
Yeah, it's so bizarre because he was interviewed by the FBI and he said that, you know, Kavanaugh's not telling the truth about his drinking. When did this go from alleged sexual assault to how much beer he drinks?
Well, apparently the people keep saying the goalposts are moving. The way I've been watching things lately, the entire stadium is moving
exactly.
From one side of a city or state to another in terms of where these allegations are going and where and what Judge Kavanaugh apparently did or did not do back in the day.
What do you think?
It's truly bizarre.
What do you, I mean, Democrats, you know, as you say, they're moving the stadiums. And imagine that turns out they're not satisfied with the White House's authorization of the FBI to interview anyone necessary for the Kavanaugh inquiry. And some Democrats even suggested that the FBI agents conducting these interviews and putting together this report this week testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee themselves. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, all these agents are going to do are interview some people that have already been interviewed, perhaps come up with some different people, ancillary people, tertiary people that may or may not have been on the site, and they may have some information to provide there, but they're going to memorialize them in these what we call FD-302s. That's the standard interview form or report, in that it's, you know, it's very formulaic. It starts with the person's name and address. They know they're talking to an FBI agent, and here's what so-and-so provided me. And it goes one page, 10 pages, 20 pages, whatever, and at the end, there's no conclusions. FBI agents in the field as investigators don't render conclusions or opinions in these reports. Now, me as a profiler, when I moved on to, I became a supervisor assigned to Quantico, I would look at cases and I could write reports and render opinions in them. And of course, I've even testified to some of those in court. But that's not what these agents are being asked to do in this kind of case. As far as them testifying, I think the reports would speak. They're going to cross-examine an FBI agent about someone from 36 years ago who may or may not said this, that, or the other. I mean, I think there's very little to gain from that point, except, of course, to perhaps delay this entire process.
So basically, it's a he said, she said situation because there's no physical evidence besides Kavanaugh's calendars. So they'll interview all these people. I mean, what, I don't know, I think four or five total. The Democrats want them to interview 24 witnesses. That's not going to happen. And they're going to present this evidence to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Is that how it works?
That seems to be how it works. You know, all 56 divisions of the FBI have what's known as they have multiple squads who do different kind of work. And a lot of the rookie agents, when they first come out of Quantico and sent to their respective division, they wind up on what's known as the applicant squad. And all they do for the first year, 2 years, is really go out and interview other FBI agent employees, or I should say candidates, and their families and their former schoolmates, whatever. And if it's a federal judge, an appellate judge, and even that rare occasion of the nomination of a Supreme Court judge, they go out in their division and talk to people that are relevant to this entire thing. So there's nothing really unusual about that. But, Amy, to go back to your question, I think, you know, a door has been open here. And I think what really, as a profiler, I'll mention that again, and you guys know that's where I spent about 12 years of my career. A very big word, a very important term in that field is that of victimology. And we have an alleged victim here in Dr. Ford, and I have nothing to contest that something, you know, didn't happen to her. I mean, it's We'll say some kind of a sexual assault took place at some point in her life. But you know what? Let's ask her some very specific questions. She can have an attorney there. And let's say, hey, were you ever sexually assaulted before? Did anybody else assault you either before or after this time? I'd want to know that. We don't even need to know specific details. If she knows the name, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But let's also do, I worked a case, and I memorialized this in my most recent book. I worked a case with a woman who came to the FBI, and from 25 years earlier, she claimed her father was a serial killer, and she, in fact, witnessed him tie these women up in her basement, decapitate them, rape them. He did things to her. He kidnapped the little boy. And along with the New York State Police, I worked this matter for the better part of a year and a half. And it turns out she was so convinced she saw what happened. But quite frankly, without giving too much away to the end of this chapter, it clearly didn't happen like she said. It was a repressed memory situation with her psychologist. And I even interviewed the psychologist, and he said, no, that's not what it is. These things really happen. And it all fell apart, like a number of other cases I've worked over the years. So these are just some of the questions I'd want to know about her. I mean, I'd also want to ask her, what's the memory of her time? Let's go back to 1982, and one of the FBI agents could say, hey, let me just ask you a few basic questions. Who was the president in 82? Who was the governor of Maryland? Hey, what are some of the movies you saw that summer? And let's kind of test her memory from back then. And she may have an answer for everything, and that works in her favor. But maybe she also doesn't, and that could also bring into question some of the memory parts of her brain and how it functioned back then and take it from there. So this shouldn't just be the three or four people that we've heard mentioned already. I really think a detailed interview of her, her parents, her siblings, and any other friends that knew her around the time could open up a lot of doors for investigators here, including the nomination of Judge Kavanaugh.
Yeah, very interesting. In a Wall Street Journal piece, two former Justice Department attorneys who routinely write op-eds together, Rifkin and Remington, they provide some sort of just kind of process insight, I think, but I want to check this up against you. They write, FBI background investigations are carried out by a special team within the Bureau called the Special Inquiry and General Background Investigations Unit, the SIGBU, as we know it in the industry. Gatherer of facts, doesn't cajole or challenge witnesses, and routinely offers them anonymity. It never proffers any credibility assessments or speculates about the motives of witnesses. And they also go on to suggest that what the Democrats are doing is to politicize this unit, potentially, and the FBI by extension, which is obviously already suffering under the weight of all kinds of politicization. But I just wanted to get your response to their characterization of this investigative unit that does the background investigations and the concern about the politicization of this unit within the FBI.
Yeah, most violations that are covered within the jurisdiction of the FBI, there's a unit at headquarters, FBI headquarters, that supervises that. And I don't remember the exact name of that unit you mentioned. The FBI changes its unit names and acronyms, you know, every few years for one reason or another. So it's very likely that is a unit based out of headquarters. But they are, and they may be supervising some of this, but I assure you, back last Thursday or Friday when it was decided that the FBI would now, you know, do this supplemental, essentially seventh background check of Kavanaugh, every division in the country was notified that this is a special. There's a new number maybe assigned to it, and agents had to work through the weekend, maybe from the applicant squad, maybe some other people brought in from terrorist squads, which is kind of scary that we're taking people away from perhaps some counterterrorism investigations to do some of this stuff. Let's just pray that, you know, nothing happens in the meantime that could have been, determined at that point. So that's what's happening. I'm sure at any given time, there's, you know, hundreds of agents working on this right now, talking to different people all around the Bureau. But I just hope the right questions are being asked by people that know a little bit about sexual assault allegations, not to mention false allegations, which sometimes can be done very honestly and credibly by someone whose just memory is tossed and turned by perhaps some other incidents in their life. I don't know that's what happened here, but this is one of the many options that have to be explored in doing the seventh now, and we'll see if it's the final reinvestigation of Brett Kavanaugh.
And remind people, you cannot lie to the FBI.
No, there's a specific violation, 1001, 18 U.S. Code, and you tell a lie to the FBI, and it certainly can be proven. We've seen some people in the last 2 years alone charged with that in this current administration. So I would advise anyone who is talking to these agents to tell the truth and nothing but the truth.
I mean, unless they're McCabe or Comey or something. I mean, there's exceptions, of course. Let me ask you an unrelated question to the Kavanaugh matter, but I want to get your take on this. We just memorialized the gruesome 1 year anniversary of the shooting in Las Vegas. And there's still a lot of questions about the shooter. And the biggest one is, why don't we know more about that shooting and what happened? What's your assessment, understandably from a distance, of the investigation into that massacre and an answer to people's question of why we don't know more?
Yeah, this is going down as one of the bigger mysteries in life. And, you know, Dan, the only thing I can come up with after one whole year of this matter not being resolved, certainly in terms of motivation, mm-hmm. I would point to this may have been an attempt at a suicide by cop, but taking out, you know, dozens and dozens of people while you're doing it. And the closest I can come to any sort of analogy to this, and I had them written down at one point, I'm not sure what I did with them, but in the last 20 years or so, we've had at least three professional commercial airline pilots take their planes directly into the ground, into a mountain. And it happened with Lufthansa several years ago in Austria. There was an Air Egypt flight in the late 90s, I think, that went down and left out of Boston. And there was another flight in Africa in the last 5 or 10 years where they deem a pilot purposely crashed the plane in the ground to commit suicide. I know it's kind of like, you know, an apples and oranges type of thing to the general public who hears that, but this is the closest scenario. This guy wanted he wasn't a commercial pilot that could fly hundreds of people, so he wanted to take out as many people as he could because there's no apparent terrorist bent to this. There's no apparent financial matter involved here. There's no sexual gratification out of this. So he must have been one of the suicide by cop, but on a grand scale, he took out as many people as he could, akin to these pilots who, for whatever reason, did the same thing there. I've been asked a few times, Dan and Amy, and that's the closest, unless I hear something else from the investigators. And after 1 year, if we haven't heard it, I'm not sure what it's going to be now. I'm not suggesting a cover-up or anything like that, but maybe this guy was the commercial airline pilot who just couldn't fly a plane that big. So he took everybody out that he could. He's a, you know, a rebel, you know, without a cause, killing himself and 60 others at the same time. So the airline scenario is the only one I can come up with, and from a behavioral perspective, but we'll see if it's ever proven or disproven.
He is James Fitzgerald, retired FBI special agent and criminal profiler who gained fame from the Unabomber case, author of a series of books, A Journey to the Center of the Mind, and you want to check out that Netflix series called Manhunt, which is about the Unabomber case, where Sam Worthington plays James Fitzgerald, Paul Bettany plays Ted Kaczynski. It's really, really good. James Fitzgerald, thanks so much for joining us, as always. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Good morning.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The more you listen, the more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, and hey, look who was in town yesterday campaigning with Spalding, Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, I saw them. A little sit down. You want me to be catty? Okay, you know
it's
what?
Up to you.
I honestly don't know what's happening. I'm just very upset with my gender this past few days because everyone's, you know, reliving their trauma for when they were sexually abused or attempted sexual assault. And I understand that. But, you know, learn how to separate the issues, lady. Her pain's not my pain. Sorry.
Hillary's pain is not your pain?
Well, Hillary was sitting down next to JB, and I'm like, I think we got a little bit of a weight problem.
When JB Pritzker sits around the house, he literally sits around the house without toilets.
Yeah, we found out yesterday he got out of $330,000 in taxes, property taxes, because he took out toilets?
No, we didn't find that out yesterday. We've known that for a year. It's just you had an IG report memorializing what we'd already know to be true, which is he tried to scam the system for, you know, a property tax break on his mansion.
Because of the toilets.
It's a glandular problem.
No one called. talks about his weight. I mean, Chris Christie, is he fit to hold office when he was going to run for president? That was a big talk topic. Nobody seems to care about Pritzker.
I care about him. And I've got this exclusive for the show.
Oh, what do you have? His cholesterol level?
No, I've got schematics or the basis for the renovation he's going to do to the governor's mansion when he gets there.
Yeah.
It's based loosely off this cottage in France. It's a cottage that's entirely made out of chocolate. I'm not kidding. Renowned artisan and chocolatier Jean-Luc Duclos specializes in chocolate sculptures. 18 square meter chocolate cottage crafted out of 1.5 tons of chocolate, nice. Which J.B. Pritzker calls dessert.
Hey,
Can accommodate up to 4 guests who will each be surrounded by decadent treats, including chocolate walls, a chocolate roof, fireplace, dresser, clock, cups, books, and a luxuriously sweet chocolate chandelier.
Wait, can you eat this?
Chocolate.
And then outside, a more chocolate goodness, a white chocolate duck pond and chocolate flower bed.
Wait a minute.
This is available to rent, or when JB is inaugurated in January, you can wait a couple of months and you can go visit the governor's mansion and have the same experience without having to go to France.
Can you eat the walls in this? I mean, can you eat the chocolate, or you just have to look at it and pray for a chocolate toothbrush?
For JB's sake, I hope not. And I also hope, please, Spalding, keep the toilets installed in the governor's mansion, especially if you're going to make it out of chocolate. It is a diuretic, you know.
Oh, okay.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy continues right now. And make sure to join me, Sean Hannity, this afternoon starting at 2 right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I know there was a lot of empathy directed in the direction of Ms. Ford per her testimony, a belief that something may have happened or at some point in her life she may have been sexually assaulted. What do you think about Julie Swetnick? Now, this is somebody that Democrats have leveled up as another accuser. And remember, women are to be believed, even if the statements are uncorroborated
or the lady's crazy
or in conflict. Julie Swetnick had this to say in an MSNBC interview she did yesterday about Brett Kavanaugh's charge that her allegations of gang rape, Kavanaugh participating in gang rape and trying to ply women with alcohol to take advantage of them, part of a group of boys, these high school parties in question. Remember he said this is like from the Twilight Zone. Here's what she said.
You know what I say to that? He's a liar.
So who do you believe, Julie Swetnick or Brett Kavanaugh? Is she somebody that you also have empathy for, that you think her allegations are credible? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. So the details of her recollection.
Well, yeah, is that she's having a hard time recollecting when she decided to come forward and when this happened to her?
So you only thought about coming forward when you learned about Dr. Ford?
Yes. Because I did not know how close Brett Kavanaugh was to possibly becoming the next Supreme Court justice.
I just want to get the timeline right about this because he was nominated in July. Dr. Christine Blasey mm-hmm. Ford came forward in the Washington Post mm-hmm. more recently in September. Mm-hmm. So was it in September that you
It's been several weeks, but I'm not somebody who follows the news. I'm not political at all.
She does remember what Brett Kavanaugh may have done to her.
I cannot specifically say that he was one of the ones who assaulted me, but before this happened to me at that party, I saw Brett Kavanaugh there. I saw Mark Judge there, and they were hanging about the area where I started to feel disoriented and were the room was and where the other boys were hanging out and laughing. I could hear them laughing and laughing. And it's very hard for me to talk about this, but it's important that somebody says something, because if Brett Kavanaugh was one of those people that did this to me, there is no way in the world that he should go scot-free on this and that he should be on the Supreme Court.
I mean, if maybe...
If he did this to me... Right.
This is why the FBI is ignoring this woman, because she's a sideshow, she's a circus, and her lawyer should have his law license yanked.
That would be Michael Avenatti.
Porn star lawyer.
She was asked about Avenatti.
Oh, and why she chose him?
My best friend went to George Washington Law School with him, and Michael knows Washington. I wanted an attorney who knew Washington and who was recommended.
But as you know, some people, actually probably a lot of Americans, have expressed doubt about your story simply because of how it came out and who represents you.
I cannot speak for other people and why they would form certain opinions. I just know that I wanted to have good representation, and I think I found it.
First of all, keep in mind that this woman claims she had 12 different pending cases against her or that she was involved in, one of them being she was suing the Washington, D.C. Transit because she slipped and fell on her nose, and claimed at the time that she lost $420,000 in modeling contracts. But as it turned out, when she, you know, push came to shove, she couldn't produce those documents because she lied. She was not part of a modeling agency. She gave her friend's last name as a fake company to try and suck off money from the D.C. transit system. So it didn't work that time.
How about corroborating her story here as it pertains to Kavanaugh? I mean, not much of a story when you can't really put the finger on Kavanaugh. You just heard her say she couldn't. How about corroborating this party ever happened? She ever attended? People in this social circle know who she is? This is Kate Snow reporting, who is the MSNBC reporter who interviewed Swetnick.
Yes, there are people that know about those parties.
This morning, Swetnick provided four names of friends she says went to the parties with her. One of them said he does not recall a Julie Swetnick. Another of the friends she named is deceased. We've reached out to the other two and haven't heard back. Swetnick says after the alleged attack on her when she was 19, she never returned to those big house parties.
Which she said she'd gone to 10 other house parties after that.
So the ACLU is running a $1 million ad campaign in states with swing states, essentially, you know, particularly red states with blue senators. Right. And here's the comparison they're making. Kavanaugh is a serial abuser on the order of Bill Clinton and Bill Cosby.
We've seen this before. Denials from powerful men.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
I've never seen anything like this.
I categorically and unequivocally deny the allegation against me by Dr. Ford.
America is watching. And as we choose a lifetime seat on our highest court, integrity matters, and we cannot have any doubt.
So there you go. ACLU is calling to mind Voltaire's formulation on the Holy Roman Empire, that it was neither holy nor Roman. Mm-hmm. The ACLU is neither civil nor interested in liberties. It's just another left-wing front organization, as left-winger Alan Dershowitz has pointed out about a organization to which he formally affiliated before President Trump was elected. So Julie Swetnick, credible, substantiates the rapist claims of the left against Kavanaugh, that he is a serial abuser.
And keep in mind, too, she sat with her attorney right for 6 days trying to drum up this one?
No,
or
was that the other one?
Deborah
Ramirez.
Deborah Ramirez. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
I mean, that's
a good point to make sure we don't forget that. Because if you really were traumatized, you had to dig deep for 6 days. Give me a break. And she was, Deborah Ramirez was interviewed by the FBI, and then Mark Judge was interviewed by them yesterday, and then his friend Ludington was interviewed as well.
Now, I just have to, again, establish the standard that's being applied to Keith Ellison in Minnesota, who's been accused of two women of abuse, physical abuse. An allegation standing alone is not necessarily sufficient to conclude that conduct occurred. That's the attorney who investigated Keith Ellison, clearing him, essentially, of abuse in the case, calling the claim unsubstantiated and thus unactionable. Hmm. Okay. Diane in Buffalo Grove, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi. I think the reason this genius Swetnick said, oh, of course there's multiple rapes and the girls just stood around. If you look at Christine Ford's quote-unquote accusation, she never mentions that she told her best friend Leland, who happened to have been Bob Beckel's first wife,
yes.
She never, while she was there, she ran out the house and never sought to secure or tell her best friend, let's get out of here, you could be attacked. So that part of the story really has always infuriated me, that if you were a friend of Leland, Beckel, Ingram, whatever her name is, if you were her friend, you'd leave your friend in a house to be either molested, abused, or God forbid worse. So no. So that's why this Swetnick said, oh, you know what? I didn't have to warn the other girls either. They were just, you know, just going to be pawns in the party here, huh?
Thanks for the call,
and I love how Swetnick took something from the Ford hearings or from the Kavanaugh hearings when Ford testified saying, it was the laughter, I remember the laughter. And she picked up on that and repeated the same, you know, comment.
Well, and the other thing, what Diane said, and you've said previously, in conversations Girl with code. Women, this keeps coming up, this idea that, according to Ford, she runs out of the house without concern for her friend, even though she had just been assaulted, so she says. There's no follow-up, but there's no testimony that she, you know, called her friend the next day to see what happened, to make sure she was okay, and that, you know, women find that highly unusual.
That would never happen in a million years. It's a girl code. I would have run after my friend like, hey, why are you leaving? What's going on? Or at the very least, you know, because we didn't have cell phones back then. We did have landlines. Or ride my bike over to her house and say, hey, what happened? Are you okay? But that conversation never happened because this Leland said she wasn't at, that there was no party. So that wouldn't all, it's her whole story is falling apart.
Eric in Stoughton. Wisconsin.
Good morning. Good morning, Dan and Amy. How are you?
Morning.
Good.
Say, I just read an article from Senator Graham that I thought would be a good thing to promote in case the vote goes down, if we have a vote on Judge Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
Lindsey Graham came out and said that he thought that Trump should reappoint Kavanaugh if the vote goes down by one, and that it should be a referendum in November. For all of us out there that think this good and fine man has been smeared, let the states that Trump won in November 2 years ago come out and tell people what they think, especially those states that have a Democratic senator now. I think that that's a great idea, that Trump should fight and reappoint him, and I guess I want to hear your thoughts on that.
Thanks for the call, Eric. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if there is nothing more cobbled together by the FBI this week than we already know, that's already been made public, then I think this is a go to the mat fight. I really do. It's such an important moment, both in terms of defining the Republican Party as well as setting a precedent for how and what we will tolerate from the cultural Marxist left. So yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to go down by a vote if nothing changes in terms of information we know to be true or information that's in the public arena that's being batted about. I think he's going to get confirmed. But look, you've got polling out that has Kramer up 10 on Heitkamp in North Dakota. That's a pickup. Manchin's worried about West Virginia. That's, you know, within the margin of error, as many of these races are.
What about Joe Donnelly?
Donnelly's the margin of error against Braun in Indiana.
And McCaskill, Missouri.
Hawley's up a couple on McCaskill. He's, again, within the margin of error in McCaskill. And the majority of residents, likely voters in states like North Dakota and West Virginia, want Kavanaugh confirmed. It's not close. And so those are all pickup opportunities for Republicans, in addition to a lot of other dead heats like Rick Scott in, against Bill Nelson in Florida. That's a dead heat. So, yeah, on the Senate side, there's potentially a good reason to suggest that if the left wants to make this election on Kavanaugh, they may regret wanting to do so. Richard on the South side.
I would have to say that if you vote, I love the fact you just brought up Ellison, and that should be absolutely waved in the face of every one of these Democratic senators, every single one of them, that we're just going to go with, what would you do if you were on a jury and listen to this trial play out, and which I, of course, been on a jury. You would deliberate for maybe the time it would take to sit down and then stand up and then go back in court and say, this is ridiculous, not guilty, we shouldn't even have this trial.
Yeah.
This is really a ridiculous show of justice in the United States. And I'm, by the way, going out of my way to talk to the kids in our high school, my kids' high school, to make sure they know what due process is and that the American law, you know, world. because you can't let the youth think that, that this is American justice, because it's certainly not.
Thanks for the call, Richard. Sean in Elmwood Park.
You know, it's bad enough we have to deal with these professional liars, the ones who are married to lobbyists, the ones whose nephews have billion-dollar contracts, like Durbin. Right? But at least he's all dialed up. He presents himself in that Mr. Rogers voice, and everything seems wonderful. But when you make me sit there and listen to this clear schizophrenic that should be banging her forehead off a rubber room with a jacket that ties in the back, that's when it's too much. And these idiot interviewers who sit there like they're watching popcorn pop instead of correcting them at each and every turn, you're just as bad, dimwits. The idea that these people who we knew nothing about can bring the country to a halt, who are clearly lying. This is what's wrong. We have no bar of competency. None. Zero. You got something to say? Just get up there. You know the right person. You got the right scumbag, slip and fall lawyer. You get to the front of the line. This is the problem.
Thanks, Sean.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
I got a new name for Senator Lindsey Graham.
What?
Senator Honey Badger. Did you see his performance on CNN?
If you don't like me working with President Trump to make the world a better place, I don't give a
Potty mouth.
This is the Honey Badger. Watch it run in slow motion. It's pretty bad. Look, it runs all over the place. Whoa, watch out, says that bird. Ew, it's got a snake. Oh, it's chasing a jackal. Oh my gosh. Oh, the honey badgers are just crazy. The honey badger has been referred to by the Guinness Book of World Records as the most fearless animal in all of the animal kingdom. It really doesn't give a shit.
Not only is he Senator Honey Badger, if I'm not mistaken, I think he narrated those Honey Badger videos that are so popular. Sounds sort of like Lindsey Graham.
Sure.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.